Welcome to the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy. This is the place for everything related to Amazon private label and e-commerce. Learn exactly what you need to start or scale your business. Get insights from the top industry experts who will discuss the latest trends and best practices in the world of Amazon. From choosing products and sourcing from a supplier to setting up your Amazon account and marketing your business, you will hear it here. Let's get started. Here is your host, Vincenzo Toscano.
Hello, guys. Welcome to another episode of the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy, the place of AI related to Amazon FBA, private label, and e-commerce. My name is Vincenzo Toscano, founder and CEO of eComsy. And today we bring in our close friend of mine, Lyden Smithers, co-founder of Titan Network, which I would say is one of the top networks out there when it comes to supporting Amazon sellers and e-commerce entrepreneurs to really succeed in their journey into, you know, scaling their business forward. And that's why I wanted to bring Lyden today, because beyond, you know, strategy, he's also very knowledgeable around everything around sourcing, specifically from China. And we know in 2025, it wasn't the best year when it comes to sourcing from China, given the tariff situation. So I'm very keen to see what has been going on, how, you know, suppliers are shifting the game, especially in 2026, and also get a sense about, you know, how entrepreneurs and Amazon sellers in general are feeling about this year. Because let's be honest, also last year was more about survival, right, and scale. So I want to know, you know, what is going on, what people are talking about, and what are the strategies that potentially can make that happen. So, Lyden, welcome to the show. Pleasure to have you. How you doing?
It's an honor to be here, man. Good to see you.
Thank you, man. Thank you. So, you know, for those that might not know you, just give us a brief introduction, then let's go from there. Yeah?
Yeah, cool. My name's Lyden. I've been selling online for about 10 years now. As you say, sourcing predominantly from China. Changed my life when I went to China and realized the business you could get done on the ground and get in there in person and build those relationships, which, you know, I'm big on. Co-founder of Titan Network, which is a community mastermind for e-commerce sellers. I run a trip to China called China Magic, where we take sellers from e-commerce to China, to Canton Fair twice a year, teach them how to navigate the fair, negotiate the best deals, the right questions to ask, and just access a lot of suppliers that you simply won't find online. So yeah, been selling a little while, been involved in exits, in acquisitions, in selling all different types of products across all different marketplaces. But my passion, as you know, is obviously the sourcing and supply chain side of it. But excited to see what questions you got for me today, man.
That's great, man. You have seen it all from beginning to end. Good. So I guess, yeah, let's start with sourcing. I mean, you have this conversation, I'm sure, on a daily basis with manufacturers you deal with, or even a part of the members, part of the Titan network. So tell me, what are your feelings going on, especially now entering 2026? Like, are you seeing the landscape changing a bit? When I say landscape, is like, are they willing to be more aggressive now when it comes to pricing, payment terms? Are you seeing actually a big migration out of China? Because, you know, 2025 are all about, oh, let's get out of China. Let's go to Vietnam. Yeah. Let's go to India. Let's go to Indonesia. Is that part, something from the past, or is actually happening? Like, what do you think?
Obviously, at the beginning of the year, it was a roller coaster of the year when it came to the tariff, right? And the more ridiculous it got, like 154, 174, whatever, I was like, okay, good. At least I know it's tactics and it's not going to stay at that sort of level. Or that was what I thought anyway. And luckily it didn't. Seems to have stabilized a little bit. It's a little bit higher than what it was before. But actually, I was talking about this earlier in the year, and my initial approach was, don't panic. China still is the only place on earth that has the infrastructure to produce at the quality, the volume, and the price that they do. Now, obviously, there are other options, and you should definitely have a backup. And we learned that this year, and I think a lot of people did have a backup. I was always sort of saying, people, don't just jump ship. Let's figure out how to become better business owners, because 50% or whatever it might be breaks down and sounds very scary. But when you actually convert that to how much you have to save on COGS, for example, or improve on PPC, if you could shave 1% off your PPC spend, 1% off your shipping costs by getting more efficient, negotiate your pricing down by a couple of percent, and break it down that way, you could sort of break even. That's what we did across our portfolio, is used it as leverage to go to China, sit down with our big suppliers that we have great relationships with and sort of put the problem on the other side of the table and sit and try and figure out, like, listen, how do we get more efficient? How do we order more raw material? How do we leverage currency? How do we leverage storage in China rather than storing in the US, and figuring out ways of becoming better business owners? And I think it taught my team and myself how to be a little bit more efficient in that supply chain and just running efficiency across the whole business, I suppose. So in terms of the impact it had, by the time it settled out, we're probably slightly more profitable for all the deals that we did and the trips to China. But yeah, going to China a couple of times last year, there was a little bit of nervousness. I know you've been to China plenty of times, been to Canton Fair.
Yep.
It was the only time I told people, don't mention US market. Like, exactly. Tell them you're a global brand and talk like about taboo. Europe. And talk about selling globally rather than just US, because it might put them off a little bit. But they're still hungry, right? They got affected the same as us. They need business. And going to China, being face-to-face shows that you're, I'm still here, right? Even current suppliers, I flew to China pretty quickly and went, I'm not going anywhere. No, I still want the products, but we do need to try and negotiate a bit. So I think they were hungry for business, but China aren't silly. Like, for the last 16 years since Obama was in and started talking about tariffs, they've been looking at other options. So they've been reducing their reliance on the US. Not to say that it's not a huge part of their export, but you see at the fair, there's a lot less US citizens there and a lot more Europeans, South Americans and different. They're looking to hedge their bets, but they're certainly not looking to remove the US as a target marketplace, because it's huge. Obviously, the opportunity is huge there.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny because even these countries I was mentioning, like, you know, Indonesia, Vietnam, India or Mexico, all these alternative people are looking into, most of the time these are only proxy factories done by the actual Chinese. So you think you're actually sourcing from people in this country, but they're just Chinese that they move the manufacturing capabilities to some of these countries to avoid tariffs. But at the end of the day, you're still dealing with the Chinese. I'm sure you have seen this as well, right?
For sure. When you're walking around the Canton Fair, and I did this when I took my group in October, like you see those, it says, oh, we've got a place in Myanmar, we've got a place in Vietnam, we've got a factory here. A lot of them had sort of seen this coming and set up factories there, which is great. And they're using Chinese machinery, but local staff, Chinese management. But what happens there is it might end up being slightly more expensive. Mm-hmm. The shipping's more expensive because there's less ships leaving. And then those countries also got hit with a tariff as well. Yeah. And also what's happening is that some factories are making the product, shipping it there, putting a label on and shipping it out. Exactly. But a lot of legitimate factories, a few were doing that, I heard, but a lot of legitimate factories were making it there. But the raw materials would come from China. So instead of being 30 to 45 days manufacturing time, you're looking 60 to 90 days to manufacture. And all of a sudden your money's tied up into that product much longer. You need to plan ahead more. And by the time it actually came to fruition, the tariffs are stabilized, end up costing the same money anyway. Exactly. So it's good to have a backup. It's great that some factories have backups, but a lot of the Chinese factories that set those up, they've pulled out of them now. They never really got them going.
I was going to mention that.
They can't control the quality as well there. The quality control is not as high over there as well, because they just don't have the presence that they have. So there's a lot to take into account. It isn't as simple as, oh, there's leather in Pakistan, let's go there.
I know. And you mentioned, like, you know, that this year you guys are entering into with a more profitable kind of landscape already. And I'm sure that has to do with the fact that you guys doubled down in China last year, right? And get out of China, which is what most people did. And that's why they're struggling, because I feel last year a lot of people got distracted with shiny objects, like, oh, China is not a place anymore. They start spending all this money moving operations of manufacturing to other countries, and then encounter the issues that you say, payment terms, quality, shipping being more expensive. And then it's like all was done for nothing. And now a lot of them are going back to China again, which is why I wanted to have this conversation. I think now this year is going to be the opposite. I feel now Chinese are going to have an extra influx of requests again. And that might drive prices up again when at the manufacturing level. I don't know if you think that could be the case. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I talk about like the importance of relationship and having that face-to-face contact and buying each other gifts and having dinner together, doing the gambay and shots of horrible drinks, as I'm sure you've done in China as well. But having that, when these, as you expect, and I expect the same thing, that they're going to have an influx of people coming back to China after the shiny objects of different countries. If you've been to China and you've spent time with them, you're still at the top of the list.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose importance with your factory and get pushed down the ladder when it comes to who they want to work with. So I think that relationship was definitely important. And you mentioned obviously people looking outside of China to source products from different places. Yeah. Luckily, I had that shiny object syndrome a few years ago.
I tried
Pakistan and Bulgaria and Sweden and Turkey and Thailand and Mexico. And I went, and years ago I did this, which is why I knew not to do it this time around, because nobody has the infrastructure China has to produce at the quality, speed, and volume that we need them to, right?
Yeah. Now let's talk about the payment side of things, because one of the things I see people struggling a lot, especially coming out of 2025, is cash flow. People is dry; they don't have cash in the bank. It's a big issue, and that's why a lot of Amazon sellers are closing shop. They cannot continue essentially fueling inventory purchase. And I think a big trick here, if you know what you're doing, is dealing with payment terms. So you need to be very smart in terms of how you navigate this with your manufacturer. So I'm keen to hear from your side, like how you've been using that to your leverage when it comes to that. Like, are you, especially now in 2026, did you manage to negotiate better terms, or are you keeping the same ones? What does it take there? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I use it to double down and get better payment terms. In some instances, I have 0% deposit and 180 days payment terms. And in other ones, I pay zero deposit and I just pay once it's sold. So it's different with every factory. And I think it's important to understand that each factory, it's important to understand how big they are, right? When they're smaller, perhaps they don't have the cash flow to help you. And when they're bigger, maybe you're not important enough.
Exactly.
So you sort of need to match the factory at the part of the journey that you're at and find a good match, right? So, but if anybody's heard me speak before, I talk about a six-step process I have for negotiating better payment terms. And it's simply sort of selling yourself and the reasons why you can grow the business and why you're so good at the marketing side of it and your success on Amazon or previous endeavors or access to influencers or whatever it might be. And then showcasing the future. I always annualize everything and talk about here's the orders I want to give you for the next 12 months. And then on the current payment terms, I can only give you 25% of that.
Yeah.
If you give me new payment terms, I can give you much bigger orders. So where people make the mistake is they go in and say, can I have better payment terms? Can I pay later? And they simply get a no. You have to present a win-win. And it has to be a win-win for both sides. What are you going to give them in return for the payment terms? And I think a lot of people skip that part. And it sounds simple. Now I'm saying it out loud, obviously, but there's a bit of a process to it. But just talk about the future and make sure you're giving in return for those payment terms.
And invest in the relationship, which is what you've been doing all these years. You know, that's why they trust you in China, because you've been there, you've been spending time, and they know that you're not only about the money, you're also about, you know, the partnership we're creating together, which most people just skip, and they just keep it very basic and they just try to flip a few dollars here and there, you know. So, and that's why they don't get the payment there.
The guys that are winning and ended up more profitable after the whole Trump tariff roller coaster that we went through are the ones that went to China, saw their factory and said, I'm here. I'm not going.
We're
gonna
make it. We're gonna make it together. Yeah.
We're gonna make it. This is gonna be fine. Like, what do you think? How do we solve this together? The ones that got on a plane for a couple of thousand dollars are the ones that are reaping the rewards now.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Now, on all this sourcing subject, what is your take on all the changes that have been coming out when it comes to AI? Because AI has also been a big disruptor, especially in last year. Like, we've been seeing so many tools being released, so many automation, and it's been helping a lot of people to now jump into sourcing way faster than before, because let's be honest, before it would be more time consuming, it would be more difficult for you to verify certain suppliers. Now, you know, there are solutions out there that make it very efficient when it comes to that. So what is your take on that? Are you relying on the solutions like that? Are you still old school? Like, what do you recommend?
We are leveraging a little bit. I love Axio, the tool that Alibaba brought out. And I know that you've been playing with it, as have I, because they've been asking me to do videos the same as you have. But I think those tools are great. I think it's, that one in particular, but then we can use other ones. I think the main thing that it's done is, in this game, speed to market is key, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like what it's done is remove a little bit of people's procrastination,
friction,
and dwelling on it and the friction, and got people to it quicker. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to actually sourcing the product, there's still a manual process involved. Yeah. There's back and forth with samples. We need to feel it. We need to hold it. But it does allow us to provide better images. It allows us to provide better briefs. And I do think it's helped from an R&D perspective. But when it comes to sourcing and all that stuff, relationship is obviously key. And getting your hands dirty. You know what I'm like. I like to go to the factory. I like to walk the floor. I like to go in every single room. I want them to show me the production line. And I can point out where things are going wrong, where scratches are made, where we can be more efficient. We can talk about buying machinery together to speed things up or make things cheaper. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of that still involved. But in China, they're doing the same thing. I spoke to a factory. I was doing a walk around with Canton Fair's media team. Mm-hmm. And they were filming me sort of having conversations with factories. And it was a huge like tin factory. They made like tins for like biscuits and things right? And I said, how many workers have you got? Standard question that I asked to get a feel for how big they are. They said, we were 5,000. I'm like, but now we're 2,500. I'm like, that's a shame. Is business bad? They went, no, business has doubled. We've just used AI and automations and machinery to get more efficient. And I was like, wow. So they've doubled their revenue by reducing their workforce. So it's not just AI, like physical machines and stuff that they're, are getting better and better. And I'm sure AI plays a part in running or producing those machines. But it's incredible how the world's getting more efficient, for sure.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned something there I want to briefly touch, which is the workforce. We all know that after Chinese New Year's, the workforce goes, they go to their homes, and a lot of them then come back. And usually there's a shortage of workforce, which has an impact on the quality of the production. Now, do you think with everything that happened in 2025, that a lot of these factories had to lay off half of their staff? Now with the influx of business, they have to hire again. But let's be honest, a lot of them are not going to have the time to train all this workforce. So potentially we could be walking into a season of a few months where quality could be a big issue in China, at least for some of these factories, because they had to ramp up production again. To a pace they were not used to for the last 6 to 12 months, right?
Absolutely, man. And listen, that can happen at any time, but off the back of your prediction, if that's what's going to happen, we definitely need to be very, very hot on that. And we have processes within our team where we ask for videos and we ask for mid-production videos and photos and stuff like that. But we have third-party inspections happening on every single shipment. Nothing leaves China without an inspection.
Yeah. And people do it once and then they assume it's going to be perfect forever.
because things can change, right? Because if you're growing your order with them, they're going to need more staff. Yeah. And if other people are growing their orders, like the factories, I've grown hugely with some factories that have started off with a small factory. Now they've got two and now they've got three big ones and they've gone bigger and bigger. Now they can't be the boss that we have, the relationship can't be in all places at once, right?
Exactly.
Don't get me wrong. Their systems and processes are pretty efficient over there, as you've seen. But listen, when there's humans involved, there's errors involved. Yeah, right?
Mistakes. Yeah, of course.
Sure.
Good. So now I would like to shift the conversation into, the landscape of, Amazon sellers. And what is going to happen in 2026. We saw 2025 being a tough year, like a lot of people struggling with Amazon because, all the fees around Amazon have been increasing, competition, the tariffs. That combined with the explosion of social commerce, a lot of people now jumping to TikTok, a lot of people investing more in D2C. But now I'm starting to feel a retraction. I feel like all those people invest so much in TikTok and D2C, Walmart, and so on, they didn't end up with the revenue and the profit they thought they were going to get. A lot of them, at the end of the day, were shiny objects. Now they're coming back to Amazon, I feel. What do you think is going to happen in 2026 with them?
So I think Amazon's continued to grow, right? Like it's the growth has retracted a little bit. Maybe there's a bit of market share. And we know, we talked about obviously cash flow with Amazon sellers. Interest rates have played a part in that. The economy in general has played a part in that. But e-commerce is strong and Amazon's still the big dog, right?
Yeah.
And it continues to grow and it plays a huge part. But it's not the only play anymore.
Yeah.
For 10 years, you could just focus, the last 10 years, you could just focus on Amazon as the sole channel, but you do need to be, you do need to embrace AI and make sure you're showing up in ChatGPT and Google AI results. You need to embrace TikTok Shop, social commerce in general, which essentially is TikTok Shop. And I think you need to embrace those. But I think to your point, shiny objects, everyone went, right, TikTok Shop's great. But perhaps your product isn't, the particular product you're talking about is a TikTok product. So what we need to do is come back to basics. Omnichannel is the future. We can't just be one channel anymore. The amount of information somebody consumes before making a buying decision is through the roof now. There's so many bits of information they need to consume and different ways of shopping. And people, it's the biggest shift in e-commerce history, right?
Yeah.
So we definitely need to be looking at those different channels. I think retail is going to be big, going to get bigger as well. And I think people are going to start to enter retail. Great for cash flow, big wholesale orders, as long as you've got good payment terms, your supplier. Yep. But TikTok is the one to look at. But don't just presume your product, because it does 10 million a year on Amazon, it's going to work on TikTok. And it's a volume game on TikTok. You have to get all that content. You have to test different things and stick with it. But just make sure it's a TikTok product. And if your brand doesn't have a TikTok product, start doing your research for TikTok and for Amazon separately. You need to come back and see, this is a product that could work in retail. This one could work in Amazon. This one could work in TikTok. So there's the different channels. We need to be across all of them. Master one at a time for anybody who's new. I don't want to scare people who are starting out and listening to this. Like master one at a time. But you need to start looking at your product development and and research based on the channel that you're looking to sell on, right?
Yeah. And I think a big mistake as well is that when people are expanding to these other marketplaces, they see it as a savior kind of with a savior mindset, right? An expansion mindset in the sense that, oh, I'm going to do TikTok because if not, I'm going to go out of business because Amazon's not working out, or Walmart or D2C. So if you're already going from that scarcity mindset in the sense that I'm going to put now all my eggs on TikTok to see if the shiny object is going to save me. And that's why it's causing a lot of these brands to struggle, because they're not doing what you mentioned, which is being tailored, seeing, oh, maybe TikTok is not the right fit, but maybe it's Walmart, maybe it's Target, or maybe it's having my own website. They just assume because it's working for my neighbor, it's going to work for me, and they're just going blind and putting the last few eggs on it and struggling, you know? So that's why it's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk about people struggling on Amazon. We see it so many times. You see it all the time. I see it all the time. Is people have early adopters from 5 or 6 years ago have owned the category for so long.
Yeah.
And now what's happening is they're dropping off that top place. They've lost bestseller. They're dropping down. It's because of their competitors potentially being on omnichannel. Exactly. They're bolstering it. And what's happening is on Amazon, you get a halo effect off the back of TikTok. The more sales you make on TikTok, the more people, Amazon sellers are Amazon sellers. If they want it tomorrow and they want it on Prime, they're going to Amazon. If they see it on TikTok, they're still going to Amazon. If that's how they're programmed, which I don't like,
most people,
a huge percentage of the United States is, then they're still going to buy it on Amazon. So yes, we're looking for sales and TikTok, but it's going to bolster and maintain our rank and contribute to that and maybe take the pressure off PPC. We talked about being more efficient across your entire business. Yep. If we can save some money on PPC because we're getting external traffic from TikTok, then it's more profitable. And then it's taking a look at zooming out, looking at the entire business and seeing where it's going to benefit. But don't underestimate the impact of sales on Amazon that a different channel could have, particularly TikTok Shop.
Yeah, I see that a lot. I mean, just like me, I'm sure you're part of so many WhatsApp groups and communities and all of that. And I see that people themselves trying to figure out the omnichannel approach. They always asking, "Oh, what is the trick in the category listing report? What is the extra keyword? What is the extra hack?" And they're still in that mindset of the 7 years ago Amazon seller that everything is a hack, everything is gaming the system for you to be in page one, and they just cannot digest the fact that the reason why your ranking is going down is not because there is a silver bid or exact match campaign you're not doing on PPC. It's because you are not doing what your competitor is doing, which is creating an actual brand. At the end of the day, you only had a listing, you had an async, you didn't have a brand, but they don't want to hear it, you know? That's the issue.
Mate, I see it so many times. It's like music to my ears hearing you say that because I was the same, right? How good was it 10 years ago when you could buy reviews and buy a bestseller badge, right? And do what you need to do. And you need to use strategies, not hacks. And you need to be a real business owner. This isn't a side hustle anymore. Mm. Like so many of the old school Amazon sellers started out. Like this is a real thing, and you have to look at it strategically. And fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, we can't just be focused on one channel anymore. E-commerce has shifted and we need to be across multiple channels. Listen, we have to learn to adapt and listen.
It's an opportunity at the end of the day. It's an opportunity because until now, so many categories in Amazon were a monopoly. They were a monopoly because this random guy launched a garlic press 10 years ago. He got lucky and he's making millions of dollars, but he has zero understanding of marketing. But he just was the first garlic press, right? Yeah. So now all these people is getting shifted by people that know real branding, real strategy. And that's an opportunity for now this category to be reborn, you know? So,
absolutely. I agree, mate. I agree.
Yeah. Cool. So start concluding. What is your last, I would say, maybe advice for 2026? What do you think? I mean, we talk about omnichannel and everything that's going on, but is there anything else you think people should be focusing the most this year to be able to succeed?
I think we covered the two things that I think it's the buying and the selling, right? Yeah. The success is in the buying as well as the selling. Yeah. If you don't have a strong relationship with your supplier, whether they're in China or somebody else or somewhere else, I would get on a plane and go to China. Yeah. Go around Canton Fair. I shared this tip the other day on another podcast that just before you even go, by telling your supplier you're going to Canton Fair, they're automatically going to know that you have access to suppliers that you don't currently by not being in the country at Canton Fair, which are their competitors, and that you're automatically on the front foot when it comes to negotiation when you're going to see them. So if anybody's planning, doing their annual planning right now, I would plan to go to China, find alternative factories for your products, for your brand, find new product ideas, and go and see your current suppliers and negotiate what you need to do. And the other thing is embrace omnichannel. Embrace TikTok Shop and embrace AI one from the buying perspective and one from the selling perspective. And if you can focus on those two things, I think you'll have some success this year.
Love it, man. So tell us, you know, how people can find you and work with you, you know?
Yeah, so you'll find me on social media on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook, Lydon Smithers or LydonSmithers.com. I have a unique name, so if you search me in Google, Lydon Smithers will come up. But yeah, love to hear from you. And if anybody needs any help, I'm here.
Thank you, man. So it's been a pleasure. Hopefully, you know, I see you soon so we can have a pint.
Absolutely, man. It's been too long.
Have Six a good week, one, man.
It's been Thanks, a pleasure. Mate.
Take care. Bye. Thank you for your time, man. Bye-bye. See ya. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The E-Commerce Lab by EcomC. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. While you are at it, we would appreciate it if you could leave an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That will make it easier for others to find out about the show and benefit from it. Want more? Visit our website at www.ecomc.com, where you can get your first consultation for free. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at EcomC.